Welcome to the Using the Whole Whale podcast, where we learn from leaders about new ideas and digital strategies making a difference in the social impact world. This podcast is a proud production of Whole Whale, a B Corp digital agency. Thank you for joining us. Now, let's go learn something.
This week on the Whole Whale podcast, we have a returning guest, Pat Duffy from The Giving Block. And he has survived. He survived a full-on crypto winter after a big crypto bubble when we thought that everything in the world was going to be on the blockchain. And now we know for certain that everything is going to be AI. Pat, how's it going?
How dare you? I'm good. How are you doing? Good to see you.
I was having a laugh because before we hit record, you were saying it's amazing how many of our clients, how many of our nonprofit clients using the Giving Block didn't realize and don't realize where the market is. So maybe let's start there. Is it still crypto winter?
It is not crypto winter, anything but. So you mentioned it. We had a crypto bear market and an unfortunate reality for people kind of on the edge of crypto, not super bullish or bearish, but just kind of riding the waves as they come. When we get a crypto bear market and the prices go down, we see a huge drop off from nonprofits in terms of overall kind of interest in crypto. And even the nonprofits who are equipped to accept crypto, you start to see it drift away from their fundraising emails, from their social media posts, from their overall strategies. Not our favorite thing to see, just given the fact that we've got tens of millions of people in the US, right, who have crypto at this point. We've got like 1.4 trillion tied up in it. Internationally, we've got about 1.3 trillion tied up in crypto right now. Those people don't go away. The user base is still there. They're still trading, still have money in it. And nurturing is very important. Now that we're back to a bull market where people have appreciated crypto, the giving is starting back up. But those nonprofits who kind of stopped engaging donors during that bear market, they're having a tough time getting their engines started back up for sure.
It's interesting looking at some of your stats. So I'm pulling from your 2024 annual report on crypto philanthropy. Really great read. You've pulled together 58 pages of page-turning insight. One thing that jumped out at me is that roughly 56%, it looks like, of the top 100 U.S. charities, 56% of the top U.S. charities now accept crypto donations. You've tipped. You're over 50%. What has led to that sort of greater than 50% adoption from these top charities?
Yeah, I think we got a few waves that kind of happened. I think the first wave, 2018, 2019 kind of timeline, we had some pioneers, a couple dozen nonprofits, Save the Children's, the Water Projects of the world, got really into crypto. These were nonprofits who were setting up their own wallets, who were trying to post on forums, get into Reddit, Discord, Twitter, meet people at conferences. A couple years later, we had another wave, which was kind of the FOMO type wave. We had some bullish conditions. Then into 2021, we had a big FOMO push. Thousands of nonprofits started taking crypto. And those are the nonprofits where some of those OGs, again, kind of fundraise all the way through, and some of those peripheral ones kind of dip back down. This time around, it feels a little different. I think it's largely due to the ETFs. I think the institutional adoption is what's exciting nonprofits. They don't make up a huge percentage of the overall market cap, but there's been a belief in the nonprofit sector, I think for a while, up until maybe even a couple months ago when those ETFs got approved, that crypto was this cyclical fad. And I think with the ETFs coming out for Bitcoin, and now that people are trading cryptocurrency in the stock market, that there's more money in Bitcoin than there is in silver, the precious metal, and that Bitcoin's on pace to pass gold this year. There's more women in it. There's more institutional money in it. BlackRock's big on it. I think nonprofits just understand this is where the money's going. And if Gen Z's, millennials, Gen Xers, this is where they keep putting their money, I think they think the $83 trillion coming from the Great Wealth Transfer is going to end up a lot more in crypto.
A lot to unpack there, but I think one big thing that I'm hearing is once we had that ETF, is that going to basically signal to the rest of the market that is like on the fence that one, the SEC, the government, the powers that be are on board? This is not some clandestine, oh, illegal activity happening over here, but rather, no, like, you know, my pension fund is potentially in this thing. Do you think that's going to be the big driver for the next, say, 20, 40%? Or do you think number go up. Look at all of the plus $1 trillion is over here. Let's just go get that.
Yeah, I think it's largely, like you're saying, the institutional adoption and then some of the kind of regulatory changes that came through. And then also just FTX going down and actually facing punishment, like just getting the sector cleaned up a little bit. I think it just built a lot more confidence into what's going on in the sector. I always found it kind of funny, right? Because you have an FTX out there, which of course like did things the wrong way and kind of crashed the whole market. I mean, banks pay hundreds of billions of dollars for like money laundering, but no one questions the institution itself. I think up until this moment, despite the fact that Coinbase, right, has significantly more users than a platform like Fidelity, it's almost like we say in nonprofits at times, it's like soccer to people in the US or football, as they call it. It's just like, is that a thing? If you talk to someone in the US, it's like, oh yeah, it's a thing. You're just not hanging out with the people who are super into it. It's again, right, the main investment mode for Gen Zs. It's the most common type of investment, even more common than stocks. For millennials, 83% of millennial millionaires are crypto traders at this point. It's like the dominant mode of investment. And then Gen Xers have even more money in crypto than Gen Z and millennials combined. A smaller percentage of them have it, but they've just got more money, right? They've been in the job market for longer. They've made more money. They've invested, diversified into it. Younger donors are getting into this stuff. And I think the average donor age of nonprofits being between 60 and 65 is where the gap has really been.
You make this point about the largest wealth transfer in history. I'm wondering if you can unpack that with the lens of, as a fundraiser, you should probably be skating to where the puck is going. How do you look at that wealth transfer and crypto adoption for crypto philanthropy?
For clients we work with that are on the larger side, so we work with about 200 of our clients are $100 million plus. They kind of dictate the pace of play for the sector, and they tend to identify some of these strategies a little bit earlier. What they like about cryptocurrency is the fact that it's a way to build a future-proof major gift program without mortgaging the present. So usually nonprofits, to your point, are like trying to skate where the puck is going, but it's easier said than done because older people tend to give bigger. They tend to have higher propensity to give, higher giving capacity, higher income, higher net worth, affinity for the organization, brand loyalty. Like there's all these reasons why kind of doubling down on the older donors tends to make sense for nonprofits. Usually when you go for these younger donors, you're thinking they'll build me a walks program. They'll volunteer. They'll give me $10 a month on a credit card, steward them after that. The average gift size for crypto, depending on the year, is 30 to 80 times larger than the average online gifts, right? We're not talking $100, $200. We're talking $5 to $60,000, generally speaking, for average crypto transfer. Average crypto user, even though these are Gen Zs, millennials, Gen X, is making $100,000 plus a year. A crypto user on average is richer than the average in any major city in America, more than Silicon Valley or any other indicator. Again, there's $1.4 trillion tied up in it, higher average gift size. And then a Fidelity report came out, which is pretty cool. They're significantly more likely to give $1,000 per year than stock and other traditional investors. It's the one way, as of right now, that you can take a really big chunk of the population who are on the younger end and target them for significant major gifts, if not transformative gifts. So if you're trying to skate to where the puck is going, it's one of those things where billions of dollars have already been donated in crypto, which is exciting. But I think the more exciting thing is, again, of that $83 trillion wealth transfer, I think something like $72 trillion are being passed on directly to heirs. Those are the millennials, the Gen Zs, the Gen Xers. And if their investing trends continue to just dominantly move in the direction of crypto, and that's where their money ends up, then the nonprofits who bet on those younger donors as recipients of that wealth transfer are going to be in a great position to raise significantly more crypto over time.
Yeah. And as we saw with things like these Bitcoin ETF and maybe ETH ETFs coming online this year, it is going to put a tailwind behind probably more inflows of capital. I'm curious, really impressive. Can you go through some of those stats again of how much more generous is a crypto donor than a traditional dollar donor?
Yeah, I'll pull up some of these stats because I want to make sure that I get them correct. So I mean, from the Fidelity report, so they're 52% more likely to give $1,000 or more to charity every year over the average Fidelity investor. So any Fidelity investor who ticked the box that they invest in crypto as well, significantly more likely to give big to charity The average gift size, I think, is a great indicator. It's an indicator of capacity to give and propensity to give, for sure. That like 5K to 14 to 16K is the upper range from the average year. It's because they have a lot of money, right? It's because crypto is the top performing asset class the last 5 years, the last 10 years, top performing real estate stocks, et cetera. People have been in this space have done quite well over time if they've held. But it also ties back to the tax incentive, which I think is like one of the big things that nonprofits miss on this. If you are a crypto investor, same thing as if you're a stock investor, if you transfer an appreciated asset to a nonprofit directly versus liquidating that and giving the cash or sending money from a bank account, you don't just get the write-off, right? If you give $1 million in Bitcoin to a charity, you actually don't owe capital gains tax on it. So depending on when you bought that cryptocurrency, when you'll get state and federal cap gains, $1 million gift made in crypto to a charity can save the donor hundreds of thousands of dollars versus if they initiate a transfer from their bank account. It's no small difference. Like when you think about these people, it's again, it's $1.4 trillion invested in this asset class. They're not going to sell it and give the nonprofit cash. They're either initiating the transfer directly, moving the asset from point A to point B into the hands of a charity who can accept it, or that $1.4 trillion is effectively offline, right? So unaccessible for that nonprofit. So I think it's a confluence of variables. They're more generous maybe because they've made a bunch of money. It may be because they're young and ideological. Maybe because they think the crypto giving thing is fun and exciting. But I think more important than anything, they get to the end of every tax year. And when you look at a high net worth millennial, Gen Z, Gen Xer, the best way that they can give to a nonprofit statistically is going to be crypto, if not stocks.
I'm curious, this tax advantage for crypto investors to give specifically when their asset is, let's say, pumping, going up. I wonder if that doesn't move toward more counter-cyclical giving trends. For example, if my favorite dog coin is going up and I'm like, I kind of know that I might be near a peak. And by the way, that doesn't always happen on the schedule of in December. But randomly, do you see off-cycle large gifts come through because of that tax advantage of actually handing over the exact asset without needing to liquidate it, incurring that tax?
Huge. Absolutely. So like right now, we're doing hundreds of thousands of dollars a day in crypto donation volume. And again, we're off-cycle. We're not anywhere near year-end. It's going to nonprofits. Like this is one of the big takeaways from this, because every nonprofit larger that we talked to is kind of like, okay, the money's out there. How do we get it? It's going to nonprofits who systematically put it in front of their donors. And I think a lot of nonprofits think of that as like, oh, I need to run like a crypto campaign, or, oh, I need to build a crypto Twitter follower, or I need to go to crypto conferences or create SEO content. Like all of that stuff is helpful and valuable. It tends to be going to nonprofits, again, like you're saying, not just year end, but off cycle, whenever the market is up, who have the crypto option at the bottom of their newsletter, who, when the capital campaign email goes out, it says, here are other ways to get crypto, stock, DAF, ACH, just anything other than a credit card, just opening those doors, right? It's a direct mailer. I actually completed one the other day. A nonprofit sent me a direct mail that had like a QR code, and I could just, send them crypto. I could just hover my phone over a piece of paper and initiate a transfer. I sent them a nice donation immediately, just because thank God it wasn't a check. But it's stuff like that. It's in the pamphlet when you're sitting at the table at a gala. It's in the folder at a major gifts meeting. It's not a whole crypto audience built from scratch. Nonprofits don't look at the data all the time. Like if you're a nonprofit in the US, unless you're a really tiny, really local charity, you have crypto investors in your audience. It's statistically impossible to not. They're too high a percentage of the population. So it happens off cycle for sure. But to the nonprofits who don't open that door, what happens instead, and this is why thegivingblock.com is also like an aggregator of charities, this shouldn't be happening. We catch it because it happens, but we actually wish this would go away. But donors go online and they Google donate crypto charities, donate Bitcoin nonprofit, et cetera. The first Google result is always thegivingblock.com. And then they start searching through random charities. They try to find ones that align with something they might be interested in. And they send it to them instead of the charity that they're sending $10 a month with a credit card. Like there are so many crypto investors who send $100,000 through our website rather than to the charity they're already supporting and in the CRM of, because that charity has never put that crypto option out there. That's the big bummer and the big, I'd say, difference maker between charities who are actually seeing significant crypto donation volume and the ones who have a button sitting somewhere on their site that no one's ever seen.
The discovery of, I think we're still early. And so I think your role in helping actually service and connecting donors with viable charities that are, you know, vetted and approved in that market. I mean, it still makes sense, right? If I have a certain crypto gain and I am new to philanthropy, I think a lot of, as you mentioned, our younger donors still finding out that next level of giving and how to become more philanthropically minded at a larger donor, you'd probably want to go through a vetting organization. So it's interesting that folks are finding it through there. I'm wondering if you can walk me through, and I don't even know if this is possible. I have, let's say, a Coinbase account, which is probably the number one, let's say, way that Americans are buying cryptocurrency. I have a Coinbase account. How would I donate my dog coin if I've, let's say, happened into a great purchase and I wanted to find a way to give it? What does that look like?
Yeah. So let's say we were to stumble into a fat bag of dog with hats. I see what you're getting at. All you would do, so like, let's say you're a nonprofit who's using the giving block. What they would do is, let's say they open up one of your fundraising emails and it says, by the way, crypto is an option, somewhere in a snippet there. If it's a QR code and they hover their phone off of whatever you sent them, or if they click the link and they're going to initiate it from their desktop, they would enter their details. If you want to accept anonymous gifts, you can turn that form off. It's really kind of a nonprofit choice. But then they would enter an email. If they want to receive an automated tax receipt, they would generate a wallet address that's unique for that donor. They would then scan that QR code or copy and paste the wallet address, again, depending on if they're going from phone to desktop or staying on their desktop. And they would just paste that in as the two address from their Coinbase account and hit send, right? You just enter the amount that you're giving based on the pledge that you committed to in the form. So again, I would just hover over QR code or click a link, copy and paste the wallet address. That's my to field, as if I'm sending a wire, an ACH or anything else. Enter a dollar value, I click send, and in a matter of seconds, it has hit the charity's accounts. It has been immediately sold for the US dollar value, whatever that was worth at the moment that it hit the account. The donor has received an automated tax receipt, and then the nonprofit has the donor details and the transaction details coupled in a dashboard.
It's so much faster, and I don't think folks fully realize how frictionless sending money out of a Coinbase account to a wallet is. It's so different than, let's say, sending my Apple shares. I got to go in, I got to log in, and I got to send it here. There's like seven steps before you get there. You just described, how do I send money and donate money from my Coinbase account to a charity? Screenshot of the address. Choose the amount to send. Confirm. And that's all it is?
Yeah, not a screenshot, but other than that, yes.
Yeah, you lost me at screenshot.
Everything else is correct. Yeah, you hover your camera over and it picks up the address, or yeah, you just paste it in the to field and hit send. And then the beauty of that too is you can like save that address and initiate a transfer later, and then they can save their transaction details in a donor account. We offer the donors their own account if they want to save kind of their tax documentation and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it's kind of like your address, like my ASPCA.org/donate. Go to my donate page. So it's almost like your address for getting a donation to your donate page, but instead it's a crypto wallet that you run for them. You immediately liquidate it. So you're not like sort of stuck with my dog coin. You actually can immediately get USDC, correct? You resolve to that. Or a US dollar, which do you actually resolve to once it hits it? Yeah.
It's just immediately converted to US dollars, and then that gets pushed to the nonprofit bank account. But yeah, it's another way to give. And this is like, again, where we get to the importance of like donor exposure. The main things off of that is like, yes, the giving method, the product itself, it's really simple and streamlined and clean. The real importance is where you put it. So there are a lot of nonprofits. This is the issue. This is also why we added a stock and a donor advised fund product. The donor advised fund is Chariot's product. It's great. We just integrated it. But there's so many nonprofits where if you try to find the stock option, the crypto option, the send a donor advised fund transfer option on their site, it's like there's so much forensics work to even discover it. And then it's like a PDF with brokerage instructions, or like an email that's like, email this major gifts officer if you want to send us money. It's like, these are donation methods with average gift sizes. Like at some of these big nonprofits, these are six-figure average gift sizes for like DAF transfers and stuff. And they're completely buried. And they just have to rely on people like doing so much legwork to get to you and even find that it's an option. And then at that point, you also have to do so much legwork to like initiate the transfer. The biggest thing, yeah, with crypto is like, yes, the product is great. If I can't click ways to give and crypto pops up in the dropdown, right? Or if I'm sitting on the ways to give page, it's like an easy option to just click on that opens that donation form and I can initiate a transfer. That's true for crypto, it's true for stock, it's true for DAF, et cetera. Like nonprofits don't get donations. It's not a crypto specific thing. I always tell nonprofits, imagine if your donate button on your site just opened a landing page that said, here's my email. Would that be better for how many credit card donations you got on an annual basis, or would it significantly reduce that? Yeah, it's just like any other giving method.
Essentially, if your donate options don't include crypto, you're putting up a sign that says, you know what, go to the giving block and go choose a random charity in this cause vertical that you care about because we can't accept your money. And like what you were saying. You're like, I'm sad when I'm watching, you know, $100,000 a day come through in donations to maybe an organization certainly willing, but maybe hadn't cultivated that personal relationship with those donors. And those donors are in your backyard already.
Yeah, absolutely. Some nonprofits even put up that sign that says go elsewhere. Like I can't say how many nonprofits were using the Donor Advice Fund product now where we went on their site and it said, if you want to initiate a DAF transfer, go log into the account where you have a DAF and initiate a transfer. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, well, you're going to send them off of your site into an interface to start a donation process. You have none of the details or information that they even decided to start a process. Right? There's no kind of abandoned cart that thing. And then also they're in an interface where they can select any number of charities that they want to initiate transfers to. A lot of them even actively encourage you to like take them into a basket.
Hey, check these other things. Here are your options that are easy, you know, frictionless ways to do. You've mentioned in your 2024 report, it mentions stock and DAF giving. What should nonprofits know about the overlap between those donor segments?
Yeah. So one is the tax optimization strategies, right? If people have crypto giving propensity, stock giving propensity, they have money in a donor advice fund account, they're usually higher net worth and aware of the tax optimization strategies. A lot of nonprofits love the idea that the whole donor journey is based on the impact of the organization and affinity for the organization. Like all of those things are obviously part of it. If they didn't care about helping people, they would just keep all the money. There's the benefit of giving to a charity is not better than just keeping the money to yourself. So these are still good people, obviously. But that tax incentive piece is huge, right? So the one piece that connects all of those dots, crypto, stock, DAF, is these are people who tend to have more money and understand that tax incentive, which means at the end of every calendar year, you have an opportunity to, for the people who have money in a DAF, try to get them to give you crypto stock directly instead. You can cut out those steps so that it doesn't get parked there. Money that sits in a DAF tends to sit there, you know, for a decade plus. I think there's $260 billion sitting in DAFs right now that was ungranted. So cutting out that step is important. And then for people who have money in DAF already though, like it's already kind of parked there, the thing that they have in common with stock and crypto is that you have to ask for it. I cannot tell you how many nonprofits don't even occasionally throughout the year ask for DAF transfers from their donor base, ask for stock donations, or even just say, hey, reminder, this is a giving option. If this makes sense for you at some point in the year, contact us or initiate a transfer. Like there's so much money sitting in DAF accounts, so much money that people have tied up in stock and crypto, so much tax incentivized reasons for them to give these particular ways. But all the money in their DAF is obviously already earmarked for charity. Got to be asking for it. So matching those specific gift methods, asking for them specifically, and then leading into that tax incentive. Those are things that across all three giving methods tend to be good strategies.
Switching gears a little here. I've heard a lot about the Bitcoin halving event this year. How do you think the Bitcoin halving is going to impact giving this year? Will this be the most generous crypto donation year in history?
This is not financial advice because I know where you're going with this. So every other Bitcoin halving historically has led to prices ripping upward. A lot of time it tends to be very bullish market conditions around the Bitcoin halving. It doesn't mean go out and buy a bunch of crypto or like move it onto your balance sheet. It doesn't mean that it'll follow that trend. But if that were to be the case, right, we're already at or hitting all-time highs in a lot of the top cryptocurrencies. If that produces yet another tailwind, plus obviously the Bitcoin ETF volumes continuing to increase, and then potentially Ethereum ETFs getting approved, all of those things come together, and we really haven't reached that kind of mainstream attention point yet, which is kind of interesting, where it doesn't feel like 2021 to me yet, at least, where people are really paying attention and we're already at the all-time highs. Definitely, right? If we have the best market conditions of all time, then we would expect to see the best giving period of all time. Really important, though, again, to reiterate, the money goes to charities that set up a solution. And similar to marketing, right, the rule of seven, just start to lightly, systematically expose their audience to the option. If nonprofits try to wait until Bitcoin is 100 grand and then just tweet furiously for a few weeks, like, they'll end up very disappointed. We get a lot of nonprofits every year who try to come in and take those swings. It's much better to be into it when it's a little boring right now, so that your donors all know it's an option. And then when those prices, again, kind of hopefully reach even higher highs, you get to reap the rewards of those donors considering you as where they make those tax offset transfers.
It's interesting for, I mean, we already know there's a vast majority of nonprofits that simply haven't engaged with this, you know, turning on the lights for crypto giving. Can you explain to me in three steps, I'm forcing you into three steps on how a nonprofit could get started with crypto fundraising?
Yeah. So one, you book a meeting with the giving block and just run through how the product works. That really is important. Like, we've considered the self-service onboarding journey, but it's the thing that I talked about that we discussed earlier in the conversation. You could paste that donation form somewhere where no one ever sees it, and you miss a huge opportunity. So that conversation explains how the product works, how it automatically sells everything, which cryptos are supported, how the receipts are automated. There's so many nonprofits who do a bunch of research before they talk to us, and they have board meetings, and they talk about what accounts they'll open and how they'll say it. Most of these problems are solved for. Just sit down with someone on our team and just get those answers first. It saves everyone a lot of time and energy. And I can't tell you how many nonprofits got blocked from taking this stuff because they're like worried about price volatility. It's like, that's a problem that got solved for in 2018. So number one, just sit down with someone on our team who just talks to thousands of nonprofits every year and just gives you all those answers instead of spending a few months on the internet trying to pull it all together. So that's one, just having a pro run through everything. Two is pulling the donation form and putting it on your site properly. It's got to be in Ways to Give, right? Easy to find when nonprofits have donors looking for their options. And preferably, there should be at least a hyperlink from your donate page. It doesn't need to be integrated in your actual form. It's not like people pick $10 a month and then do that in Bitcoin versus a credit card. It really is a deliberate alternate selection. But being able to just jump off and give that way, right, is easy to find on your website and easy to give. Right? If those doors aren't open, if they're not high conversion, if they're not high discoverable, you're not going to get donations. And then the final piece is the active fundraising. Like, this is the adventure, as we call it at the Giving Block, where you kind of decide, how much are we going to ask our donors to give this stuff? Are we going to try older donors, younger donors? Are we going to tweet about this? Are we going to do a press release that we take it? Are we going to do an NFT drop where we fundraise off that? Are we going to build some SEO content, try to get to the top of Google search, run some ads? Those considerations are the final piece. How much you decide to focus on, like, using your crypto accessibility as a way to earn net new donors, and then really opening that door far and wide for existing donors to make sure, again, you don't have that 28-year-old Bitcoin millionaire who's going to thegivingblock.com and splitting $1 million across five charities they've never met because they don't know you take it.
Yeah, that's enough to wake me up, realizing it, like, just because I didn't accept it doesn't mean, like, that donor wasn't there and wasn't already there in your backyard is a good wake-up call, I think, for folks. In terms of stories, is there a standout donation story from last year? I know we were talking about trends, we're talking about numbers, but sometimes, you know, there's something to be said for, let me tell you about this one time.
Yeah, I think there's a few. A quick one that I like to always hit on is Orangutan Outreach. Like, this was a $500,000 a year charity. Mm-hmm. And they tripled their annual budget fundraising crypto. So over $1 million in a single year raising cryptocurrency. I think that's a great story just because they did it through DMs. Now, this is not the primary recommended strategy. This is not what we're recommending to everybody, but it shows if you have someone at the organization, let alone several people who are really bullish on crypto, it's a really exciting thing for them to be focused on. to do outreach to people in the space. The lines aren't as long as in traditional finance to meet some of these important and high impact donors, right? The content that you can create is a lot less crowded when nonprofits start getting on Twitter and talking about this stuff. Rich, their founder, was into NFTs in particular, and he did this outreach and tried to find partners. And as they were dropping new NFTs, wanted them to be the beneficiary of it. And they found alignment with Bored Ape Yacht Club, which ended up being one of the biggest NFT projects of all time. So just by finding partners where they're just like, it would be nice to have a charity partner for our new project, our new token. Remembering also, of course, some of these projects don't go places. Some are scams. Don't promote a bunch of projects you've never met. We screen those for charities as well. But this was a big one. And it really just came from him being interested in NFTs. They welcomed an additional work stream for him. He was doing the research anyway. And he just DM'd creators and would become the beneficiary from NFT projects. I think that was fun. And then the other story we always like to tell was Save the Children. We now have about 200 million dollar plus charities that we work with of the thousands that are on the platform. They were the first big one to say yes and set up with us. And it wasn't because of the automation and donation form. It was because they've been taking crypto since 2013. We started working together in 2018 because they hadn't got that many donations. They had 2 million Twitter followers. They are Save the Children. So they have a lot of donors. No one was really giving the stuff. And their story is great because we were like, how often do you tell people you take this? And they were like, we don't tell anyone we take this. We're like, that's interesting. You should, right? And they really just did the occasional tweet where they were like, you know, we take Bitcoin. And people were like, oh my God, am I going to send you a lot of Bitcoin all of a sudden? And then they'd put it in the bottom of a capital campaign email. It's like, you know, Bitcoin is an option for these other cryptocurrencies. And of the millions of people who support them, of course, plenty of them had cryptocurrency and some choose to give that way. So they became like, I don't know how much they've raised at this point, 7 million plus the last time I checked, maybe it was a year or two ago. A huge just fundraising area for them just by, again, very simply sprinkling it into stuff. And then they've got a Tori Rossetti at their organization who's gone even further, goes to conferences and stuff now. But I think good examples of like, you kind of find what you're good at, your areas of interest, sprinkling it into existing donors. And again, like we said, there's tens of millions of people in the US who have this stuff. The overlap between you and your existing audience, there's always some intersection.
Yeah, it's a good reminder to have the crypto option alongside the other giving options. And I think some of the stigma of, you know, crypto has vanished as you look at, again, folks like BlackRock, large institutions being like, yeah, no, you can put your pensions in here now. This is an approved ETF. And I think that was different. You know, it was different even just, you know, a couple of years ago, where you're like, oh, we don't want to mix it. We don't want to seem like we're up to something shady. And I think that's gone now, you know, in large part. Yeah. I think, you know, y'all have done a lot of work in normalizing this and in bringing crypto philanthropy to the larger market.
Yeah, it was pretty much just us.
I remember. That's why I reached out originally in a podcast. I was like, I feel like there should be more people doing this. And
I was kidding. Really crazy. I meant for mainstream crypto adoption.
Oh, no, but yeah, you did.
BlackRock helped.
BlackRock jumped in. Random question. What is the most generous coin out there?
That's a great question. So for years, Bitcoin donations dominated. As of 3 years ago, Ethereum beat Bitcoin for the first time. And that was largely on the back of kind of the rise of NFTs and some of these kind of layer two use cases. Mm-hmm. Like there's just really just kind of growth and outpouring of activity that came on that network. All of that activity just led to a lot more kind of like NFT drops as fundraisers. That was when we did the fundraiser with Stella Artois and Gary Vaynerchuk and water.org, where they had that drop Artois, I think is what they called it. They did that multi-million dollar fundraiser. Like ETH really dominated, I'd say, from all that activity. In bear markets, we see a lot of stablecoin giving, which is interesting. Like stablecoins, we always have millions of dollars in stablecoin gifts. We're just people using it like money. I think that's an interesting indicator of the lack of tax education. Again, to your point, these are younger people. 60% of them work with advisors, but like close to half, right? If you think about the other 40%, like they don't even work with a financial advisor. They buy their crypto on Coinbase. They buy their stocks on Robinhood. They're trading information on Reddit. They don't have a financial advisor. They do tax on TurboTax. Charities never even offer it as an option. Like crypto is a giving option, isn't just a thing that they think about. I think there's so much untapped opportunity there. Because every time I see a stablecoin gift, I'm kind of like, why? Why would anyone? It would be like buying your groceries with a share of Tesla. It's like, well, you're just going to exit a position and just eat capital gains for no reason. It's just, I'm not sure why it happens other than the lack of education. But stablecoins dominated last year in a bear market. Lots of people had appreciated crypto at that time. They just don't think of themselves. There's a psychological component too, as being up. If you have something that goes up 500%, and then it drops down 400. Now you're still, you've doubled your original position. You feel like it's got room to grow and you kind of feel bad parting with that money. I think that's part of it. But stable coins, again, really important. ETH and Bitcoin are really good. And then some things that people are eyeing are things like Solana this year because of the rapid reemergence. Other kind of top altcoins and then meme coins just because of the network, kind of the social network aspect of it. Like Doge was a really big cryptocurrency donated when we worked with Team C's, for instance, just because. It's YouTubers, it's memers, create a lot of content. And you see meme coins come in just kind of because they're having fun and they like to do the charitable stuff.
Well, it's interesting because if you think about it as a motivation, like tax incentive is actually kind of a poor one. Also a poor one and a macro look at nonprofit giving. Only about, call it 15% thereabouts, actually itemize deductions that you're like, oh, you, gifts to 501c3s are tax deductible. We all say these words. We all send the receipts, but 15%, only 15% of humans are doing that. So maybe you can talk to me a little bit about how, when you're on that crypto philanthropy focused communication, how are you separating that communication? You're like, I mean, you're not going to lead with taxes. You're not going to maybe lead with traditional messaging though either, are you?
Yeah, it's got to be a hybrid. It's a good point. I think that 15% gets misrepresented though, because it's kind of like, if you were going to say like, what percentage of human beings are billionaires? It'd be like, okay, that's a very small number of people. So, but how much of the money do they have, right? So when people talk about that 50% that itemized, it's like, I think one, there's a huge lack of tax education because it's like you say, it's not a bumper sticker. Like the fact that people who love cryptocurrency end up with more cryptocurrency when they donate cryptocurrency instead of cash, because there's no wash rule. You can give $1 million of Bitcoin. You can take your $1 million. You can buy $1 million of Bitcoin right now. You end up with the same $1 million of Bitcoin. At that today's cost basis, you now don't owe the 150 grand, let's say, in cap gains tax. And the charity got the same million. You get the $1 million write off. The taxes went away. It's not a bumper sticker. It's like not easy. People don't just like bump into that type of information. So in short, I think there's a lot more people who would take advantage of it if nonprofits featured it as an aspect of their communications. And a huge percentage of the volume comes from these people. One of our big indicators being a lot of our biggest gifts come from people in their 50s, 60s, 70s. That's crypto gifts, like let alone stock and DAF. Like these are donations coming from people who have money tied up in the markets. They diversify lightly into crypto. They have so much money that now they've got $3 million in Bitcoin that just kind of skyrocketed out of nowhere. And that's their most tax-efficient giving method this year. People who had a $50,000 pledge to a university recently, and they were like, I was going to do it over 5 years. Can I do it now? Because my Bitcoin is up so much. It just like makes sense for me to initiate the transfer. The tax piece is really important because like you said, it's not a huge percentage of your audience who, let's say that's their primary driver. But for the ones who are making that consideration, it can be a huge percentage of your annual revenue as a nonprofit. If you're making sure not to miss those first, I think that's important. Then to your point, when it comes to the overall user base, 94% of the users, though, are millennials and Gen Zs. Over half of the money is Gen X and baby boomers in crypto. But at a population level, they're a very small percentage. For all of those individuals that you're using to kind of bolster your donor base, get younger, kind of build for the future with those younger donors, the tax stuff is a light component you sprinkle in. But it's really just kind of making it a fun way to give, an interesting way to give. It's content that you're posting on social that they might be more likely to follow or engage because of, right? It's a way to kind of spice things up and just make sure that like you are discussing content and information the same way you might talk about AI, that they find relevant and interesting, right? So crypto becomes this thing where our mission is our mission no matter what. Your giving option is whatever works best for you. This giving option is the most tax efficient for some donors. Read a bit here to figure out if that's you. And it's fun. We're doing a crypto fundraiser, right? With this meme coin, whatever it might be. And maybe that's a reason to click and follow us and just kind of stay tuned in.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's important to align your motivations properly about what size gift and the meaning it can make to the mission, rather than like, look how much you can save in taxes. It's not the lead, right? It's not the lead. It's a by the way. And I think that's, you know, important for the amount that we went into it. Also, for fun, just to mix our bubbles together, we built a crypto donor framing AI that will help bring how you talk about your organization and overlap it with a crypto donor mindset. So you can find that at causewriter.ai/resources and look for the crypto donor framing GPT we built, because why not mix a couple bubbles together and see what happens?
I love it. I think it's fun. It's both, right? Like we were saying with the tax incentive. Make sure that you put it in front of donors. Just send the fundraising email you're going to send anyway. And then it's like, hey, by the way, we take crypto and there's a tax incentive. Read about it, see if that's you. And then to your point, you can also just like send a donation email to all of your donors under 40, right? Who are above a certain wealth level or whatever else it is. It's like, hey, we take this stuff and we kind of want to do cool crypto stuff this year. Is that a crypto specific goal, right? Maybe do something with NFTs. Like that can be a really good, to your point, engagement tool.
All right. Is there anything, thank you so much, so generous with your time to explain all of these pieces. Is there anything about this 2024 annual report on crypto philanthropy that you want to highlight that we missed?
Yeah. I mean, I guess just as a rundown, like the majority of Fortune 100 charities are fundraising this stuff right now. I think it doesn't feel that way to a lot of nonprofits that it's like that normalized, but I think that's important to know. In terms of the normalization of crypto in general, we talked about it. Like it's a multi-trillion dollar asset class now with BlackRock and all the big banks kind of in on it. Every retirement plan in Canada through Fidelity has crypto in it now already. 1% conservative, 3% moderate, 5% aggressive. It's kind of sprinkled into everything. They're trading crypto on the stock market. I think another interesting indicator is it was a boys club. For sure, like in the early days, even last year, it was 18% women only. This year, surveys, the average is 29% of the user base is women. It's like getting to a third, like creeping up toward parity. I think that's just a great kind of institutional adoption piece where it's been kind of off and unto itself and you get kind of that closed off community. I think it's a good indicator of like mainstream platforms and more widespread adoption. And then, of course, the ETF performance, right? Like the ETFs are there on the stock market, but it's not just that they're on the stock market. Like the Bitcoin ETFs are top 10 performing ETFs of every type of ETF in human existence. Like it's a huge part of the stock market now and a big part of kind of traditional markets. People are investing and it's not going anywhere. And we think about young people in particular, like we said, Gen Zs, it's their main investment method. Millennials, it's like one of the most common, especially for millionaires, and Gen Xers have it too. It's where the great wealth transfer funds are going, at least a huge percentage of it.
Well, thanks for making the nonprofit audience more aware of this huge opportunity to increase giving, to turn these crypto dollars into impact. And that's why I love the work that you're all doing. Thanks, Pat.
Yeah. Thank you, George.
This has been Using the Whole Whale podcast. If you want to keep learning more about these topics and others, head on over to wholewhale.com/university to keep learning with us. Thanks as always to GregThomasMusic.org for his tunes that underwrite our tracks. They're fantastic. Hope you're doing well, Greg. And just a reminder, subscribes really help us on any platform that you listen to us on. Please give a thought to click and subscribe and maybe even a comment, because we like hearing from you.